Imagine someone like Maria, a 72-year-old New Yorker. She's been in her home forever, built up tons of equity, but fixed income, rising costs. That equity feels kind of locked away. It's a story we hear a lot across New York State right now. Retirees with valuable homes, but struggling maybe to access that value without taking on more monthly bills.
Exactly. Record levels of home equity, but real pressure on budgets.
So today we're taking a deep dive into something that could be, well, a real game changer for people like Maria, the reverse mortgage.
Right.
Our mission here is to kind of unpack this thing because it's often misunderstood. Explain how it actually works and help you figure out if it might be a way to tap into your home equity, but without selling or making new monthly payments. We'll pull out the key stuff so you walk away knowing the score.
That's a great way to put it. For so many New Yorkers, their home is their biggest asset. But it's stuck, right? It's not liquid. The challenge is getting that value out, making it usable cash, especially if you're on a fixed income and just can't handle new debt. So a reverse mortgage, the official name is HECM, Home Equity Conversion Mortgage, or for those higher value homes, you might hear proprietary or jumbo reverse loan. It specifically lets homeowners, 62 and older, convert some of that equity they've built up into tax-free cash. It's really about giving people more financial breathing room while staying put.
That's a fantastic overview. So let's really get into the nuts and bolts. How do these actually work for someone living in New York? What are the basics?
Okay. So at its heart, it's just equity conversion. You're using the value you already have in your home.
Simple enough.
Eligibility really comes down to two main things. Age, the youngest borrower has to be at least 62, and the home's appraised value. Now, for the most common kind, the HECM, that's federally backed, there's an FHA lending limit. For 2025, it's just under $1.15 million.
Okay, $1.15 million cap for HECMs.
Right. But the really big thing, the part that makes it so different, is you are not required to make monthly principal or interest payments while you're living there.
That's the headline feature, isn't it?
It really is. And then there's that crucial protection, the non-recourse clause.
Okay, the non-recourse thing sounds amazing,
Yeah.
but just so I'm crystal clear, if the housing market, say, tanks and the loan balance actually goes above what the house is worth, the lender eats that difference, not me, not my kids. How does that work for them?
You've nailed it. That's exactly what non-recourse means. Even if there's a big downturn and your loan balance ends up higher than the home's market value when the loan ends, neither you nor your heirs will ever have to pay that shortfall out of pocket.
Wow.
The lender takes on that risk. It's a really unique safeguard built into these government-insured loans primarily, offers huge peace of mind.
Okay, that is huge. So here's where it gets really interesting, I think, for someone weighing their options. How is this really different from just doing a traditional cash-out refinance? Because both seem to get you cash from your equity, right?
They do, but they operate very, very differently. And those differences are critical. Let's break it down.
Yeah, Liz.
Okay, reverse mortgage. Minimum age 62. Cash-out refi. No age limit. Huge one. Payments. No monthly principal or interest payments required on the reverse mortgage until it matures, like you sell the home or move out permanently.
Big relief for cash flow.
Massive.
Wow.
Whereas a cash-out refi, you start making principal and interest payments immediately, every month.
Okay. What about qualifying?
Also different. For a reverse mortgage, it's more about a residual income test. For a cash-out refi, it's the full debt-to-income, or DTI, and credit score deep dive.
Could you just unpack that difference real quick? Residual income versus DTI. What's that mean practically for an applicant?
Sure, good question. Think of residual income like this. The lender wants to see if after your essential living costs are covered, you have enough money left over each month to comfortably handle property taxes, insurance, and basic home upkeep. It's less about your past credit history and more about your current ability to maintain the property.
Okay, focused on the home expenses.
Right. Whereas a traditional DTI looks at all your debts, car loans, credit cards, everything against your total income, and your credit score is a major factor. So for a retiree, maybe on a fixed income, but who owns their home outright or has low debt, that residual income test can sometimes be easier to pass.
That makes sense. A really important distinction. And how do you actually get the money? Is it just one check?
With a reverse mortgage, you've got options, which is nice. You can take a lump sum, you can set up regular monthly payments for life, or a set term that's the 10-year option. Or you can open a line of credit that you can draw on as needed. And that line of credit can actually grow over time.
Oh, interesting. A growing line of credit.
Yes, the unused portion grows at the same rate as the loan accrues interest and fees, giving you access to potentially more funds later. A cash-out refi, though, that's almost always just a one-time lump sum payment.
Got it. And liability.
Huge difference here, too. Reverse mortgage, non-recourse.
Yeah.
Your liability or your estate's stops at the home's value.
Right, we covered that. Peace of mind.
Exactly. Cash-out refinance. You have full personal liability for the entire loan amount, regardless of the home's value down the road.
Okay. And finally, what do people typically use them for?
The uses often differ too. Reverse mortgages are commonly used to supplement retirement income, maybe pay off an existing mortgage to eliminate that payment or cover healthcare costs. Cash-out refis are frequently used for things like major home renovations or consolidating higher interest debt.
Okay, that comparison is super helpful. So, thinking about our listener, maybe someone like Maria, how do they know if they actually qualify? Let's get specific about eligibility in New York.
All right. So number one, as we said, youngest borrower must be at least 62.
Check.
The property type matters. It needs to be a 1-to-4-unit home that you live in as your primary residence. FHA-approved condos work, and then PLUDs, planned unit developments.
What about co-ops? Very common in New York City.
Ah, good point. Generally, no. Co-ops are typically not eligible for reverse mortgages. Because with a co-op, technically you own shares in a corporation, not the real estate itself, which complicates the lien process for these loans.
Okay, important New York detail. No co-ops. What else?
You need significant home equity. Usually, the rule of thumb is 50% or more after paying off any existing mortgages or liens with the reverse mortgage proceeds.
Makes sense. Need enough equity to borrow against.
Exactly. Then there's that financial assessment, the residual income test we talked about, to make sure you can handle ongoing property taxes, homeowners insurance, and basic upkeep.
Okay.
And very importantly, there's mandatory counseling. You have to complete a session with an independent, HUD-approved counselor before you can even apply.
Why is that required?
It's a consumer protection measure.
Yeah.
It ensures you fully understand how the loan works, the costs involved, the different payout options, and your responsibilities. It's there to help you make an informed decision. The lender gives you a list of independent agencies.
Good safeguard.
Yeah.
And you mentioned taxes and insurance.
Yes, absolutely crucial. You must stay current on your property taxes and homeowners insurance. Failing to do so can lead to default. However, there are options, like setting up an escrow account from the loan proceeds to help manage those payments if needed.
Okay, so even if you need the age and equity basics, are there common things that might trip someone up, make them not qualify? Any common pitfalls?
Yes, definitely. Even if you tick the age and equity boxes, you could run into issues. For example, simply not having enough equity left after paying off your existing mortgage or other liens. The loan amount is based on the remaining equity, so sometimes it's just not enough.
Okay, the numbers just don't work out.
Right. Another one is the condition of the home. If the appraisal flags significant health or safety issues, like a leaky roof or major structural problems, those usually need to be repaired before the loan can close. Lenders need to protect the collateral.
Makes sense. Protects their investment too.
Exactly. And finally, things like unresolved tax liens against the property or maybe recent bankruptcy judgments that haven't been fully discharged. Those can be deal breakers until they're resolved. They cloud the title.
Gotcha. So it sounds like there's not just one flavor of reverse mortgage. You mentioned HECM and jumbo. What are the options for New Yorkers?
That's a great point. There are really three main categories you'll encounter. The most common, by far, is the HECM, the Home Equity Conversion Mortgage.
The federally backed one?
Precisely. Federally regulated, available pretty much everywhere in New York, subject to those FHA lending limits, that roughly $1.15 million cap for 2025.
Okay.
Then you have proprietary jumbo reverse mortgages. Think of these as private loans, not FHA insured. They're designed specifically for homes valued above that FHA limit. So if
Okay.
you're in Manhattan, parts of Westchester, the Hamptons maybe, where home values are quite high,
Yeah.
these can be a good fit. Loan amounts can go much higher, potentially exceeding $4 million, sometimes even more, depending on the lender and the property value.
Wow. Okay. So that covers the high end. What's the third type?
The third type is single-purpose reverse loans. These are much less common. They're typically offered by state or local government agencies or sometimes nonprofits.
For specific things.
Exactly. As the name implies, the funds can only be used for one specific approved purpose, maybe property tax payments or essential home repairs like a new furnace. The upside is often lower closing costs, But the big downside is that very restricted use of the funds.
Okay, good to know. All the options exist. So we keep coming back to no monthly payments, which is obviously huge. But beyond that, what are the really big benefits for homeowners in New York? Why should someone seriously look into this?
Well, the benefits go quite a bit deeper. A major one is accessing that cash completely tax-free. Remember, it's treated as a loan advance, not income.
Big deal, especially in retirement.
Huge. Then there's that flexibility in how you receive the money, that lump sum, the steady monthly checks, or that growing line of credit we talked about. You can tailor it to your needs.
Right, the options.
Of course, the core benefit. No required monthly P&I payments frees up cash flow dramatically. And for your family, that non-recourse protection is invaluable. It guarantees your heirs won't be stuck with a bill larger than the home's worth.
Peace of mind again.
Absolutely. And the funds are versatile. Use them for living expenses, health care, aging in place renovations, or even, as we'll touch on, as a buffer for your investment portfolio during market dips.
You mentioned portfolio protection earlier. That sounds like a pretty sophisticated strategy. Can you give us maybe a few more concrete examples of how retirees in New York actually use these funds?
Yeah, absolutely. It moves beyond just basic needs into smart financial planning. One of the most common uses, definitely, is paying off an existing forward mortgage. Wiping out that monthly payment can transform a retirement budget.
Instantly frees up cash.
Instantly. Another big one is funding home modifications, things like walk-in showers, stair lifts, ramps, making it safer and easier to stay in your home long-term, you know, age in place.
Makes sense. Keep people independent longer.
Exactly. And the investment strategy piece is really interesting. Think about a market downturn, like we saw recently. Instead of being forced to sell stocks or mutual funds at a loss to cover living expenses.
Yeah, selling low is painful.
Right. You could draw from your reverse mortgage line of credit instead. Tap into your home equity, let your investments recover. It acts like a financial shock absorber.
That's a really powerful concept, using home equity to protect other assets.
It can be. And specific to New York, sometimes having too much in liquid assets can disqualify seniors from certain benefit programs, like the Enhanced Star property tax exemption. Carefully structuring reverse mortgage draws, maybe using the line of credit, can sometimes help manage assets to maintain eligibility for those local benefits.
Interesting. Okay, this all sounds quite positive, but it's always fine print, right?
Yeah.
How do these loans affect things like taxes, passing the home down, or even government benefits like Medicaid? These are big worries.
They are, and it's crucial to be clear on these. Taxes first. As we said, generally the money you receive is not considered taxable income. It's a loan advance.
Okay, check. Estate planning.
Your heirs inherit the home. Absolutely. They aren't forced to sell. They typically have options. They can pay off the reverse mortgage balance. Often lenders allow payoff at 95% of the current appraised value if the balance is higher and keep the home. Or they can sell the home, pay off the loan from the proceeds, and keep any leftover equity.
So they still benefit from any appreciation beyond the loan balance.
Precisely. Now, Medicaid and SSI. This is where you need to be really careful. These are needs-based programs with strict asset limits.
Right.
Taking a large lump sum from a reverse mortgage could push your liquid assets over the limit and disqualify you.
Ah, okay. Potential pitfall.
Yes. So if you rely on or anticipate needing Medicaid or SSI, it's often better to use the line of credit option or structured monthly payments. Mm-hmm. Drawing smaller amounts as needed can help you manage your assets and stay below those thresholds. But honestly, this is complex stuff.
So get professional advice.
Absolutely. If Medicaid or SSI are part of your picture, consulting with an experienced elder law attorney is really essential before proceeding. They understand the local rules.
Really important takeaway there. What about other protections for borrowers? Yeah. And what are some best practices people should follow?
Well, the biggest protection, we keep coming back to it, is that non-recourse feature. You or your heirs won't owe more than the home's value. That's fundamental.
Can't stress that enough.
Right. There's also something called a LISA, a life expectancy set aside. If there's a concern about your ability to consistently pay future property taxes and insurance,
yeah,
you can opt, or sometimes it might be required based on the financial assessment, to have a portion of the loan proceeds set aside specifically to cover those future charges. It's like an internal escrow account managed by the lender.
Oh, okay. So guarantees those critical payments get made.
Exactly. It provides peace of mind for both the borrower and the lender. As for best practices, definitely stay on top of property taxes, insurance, and basic upkeep. Some lenders, like I know Jet Direct is one example, even offer regular servicing check-ins, maybe biannually, just to touch base and make sure everything's okay.
Proactive approach.
Yeah. And another key thing, especially for couples, whenever possible, make sure both spouses are on the home's title and listed as co-borrowers on the loan before it closes.
Why is that so important?
It ensures that if one spouse passes away or needs to move into long-term care, the surviving spouse can continue to live in the home and the loan terms remain in effect. If only one spouse is on the loan might become due and payable when that borrowing spouse permanently leaves the home.
Ah, crucial for the surviving spouse. Okay, so if someone's listened to all this and thinks, okay, this might be for me, what does the actual application process look like? How long does it usually take?
Generally, you're looking at about 30 to 45 days, sometimes a bit longer, from starting the counseling to closing the loan.
Okay, what are the steps?
First is that mandatory counseling. You schedule and attend the session with a HUD-approved counselor. That usually takes anywhere from, say, 1 to 7 days, depending on scheduling.
Get the certificate.
Right. Then, once you choose a lender and formally apply, you'll receive initial disclosures within about 1 to 3 days. These outline the loan terms, costs, and include any New York-specific notices.
Lots of paperwork.
There is. Next is the appraisal. You'll need to provide access to your home for the appraiser. The lender orders it, and that usually takes about 1 to 2 weeks to get scheduled and completed.
Okay.
Then comes underwriting. This takes about a week, usually. You'll submit your financial documents, okay, proof of income, assets, that sort of thing, and the lender reviews everything to confirm your eligibility and the property's compliance.
The final check.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And assuming everything checks out, the final step is closing. This usually takes 3 to 5 business days. You sign the final loan documents, often with a closing agent or attorney, and then the lender disperses the funds and records the mortgage line.
So 30, 45 days, roughly. That's actually not too bad.
Compared to some other processes, yeah, it's fairly streamlined.
Now, even with this option sounding potentially great for some, it's always smart to know all your choices, right?
Yeah.
For our listeners weighing everything, how does a reverse mortgage compare against other ways people tap home equity? Like ALOCs or downsizing.
Absolutely. Context is key. Let's look at the alternatives. A home equity line of credit, a HELOC. No age requirement. Payments are usually interest only at first, then amortizing. It requires full underwriting, credit checks, income verification. You keep your home. Best for maybe short-term, flexible access to smaller amounts.
Okay. Cash out refi, we touched on that.
Right, again, no age requirement. But you have immediate monthly principal and interest payments. Full underwriting, you keep your home. Often better suited for larger one-time needs like a major renovation, assuming you can handle the payments.
Got it. And the big one, downsizing.
Downsizing. Obviously no age requirement there. But it means selling your current home, finding a new one, incurring moving costs and new housing expenses. You don't retain your current home. It's really best if your main goal is pulling out all your equity and you're ready for a significant lifestyle change.
So very different goals and outcomes for each option.
Very different. Each tool has its place depending on the individual situation and objectives.
What about some really common questions you hear all the time? The FAQs about reverse mortgages.
Oh, okay. Yeah. A big one is always, how much money can I actually get?
Right. The bottom line.
And the answer is, it depends. It's based on a calculation involving the youngest borrower's age. Older borrowers generally qualify for more of the current interest rates and the home's appraised value, up to that FHA limit for HECMs, or higher for proprietary loans.
So it's personalized.
Very much so. Another one we hear constantly, stemming from old myths, is, will my kids lose the house?
Yeah, that fear persists.
It does. And the clear answer is no, not automatically. As we discussed, they inherit the property subject to the loan. They have the choice to repay the loan, often at that 95% of value option if needed, and keep it or sell it, pay off the loan, and keep the difference. They are protected by the non-recourse clause.
Okay. Good to reiterate that.
Mm-hmm.
Anything else common?
People often ask, can I get a reverse mortgage on my vacation home or a rental property?
And the answer?
No. Reverse mortgages, both HECM and most proprietary ones, are strictly for your primary residence, the home you live in most of the year.
Okay, primary residence only. Good to know. So just to wrap this part up for our listener, could you give us that super quick eligibility checklist again, the main things to consider?
Sure. Quick check. Is the youngest borrower at least 62?
Okay.
Is the home a 1-to-4-unit property, an FHA-approved condo or eligible PUD and definitely not a co-op?
Right.
Is it your primary residence and generally well-maintained? Do you estimate having about 50% or more in equity after any existing liens are paid off? And finally, can you comfortably manage to stay current on property taxes, homeowners insurance, and any HOA dues?
Got it.
If you can mentally tick yes to those, then reverse mortgage is definitely something worth exploring in more detail.
Perfect. So, thinking about everything we've discussed, what does this all mean for you, the listener? We've really dug into reverse mortgages in New York, the good, the process, the things to watch out for. It feels like it's not just about getting cash, it's more about rethinking your home equity in retirement.
That's exactly it. It shifts the perspective. Your home isn't just a place to live. It can be an active part of your financial strategy.
A dynamic asset, not just a static one.
Precisely. So this brings up a really interesting question to ponder. When you start seeing your home equity that way as a flexible, dynamic financial tool, how does knowing about options like a reverse mortgage change how you approach long-term financial planning, especially, with unpredictable markets and costs always seeming to go up?
Yeah, it really challenges those old assumptions about just letting that equity sit there untouched, doesn't it? Definitely something for you to think about, to mull over as you consider all the tools you have available to shape the retirement you want.